We're going to look together at John 13, verses 1 to 17. It would be really helpful if you had that passage open. It's page 954 in most of the church Bibles. As we look through the passage, I'm going to put sort of some of the thoughts that we talk about on the screen, just to help us to follow that through and see the logic of things. And then I'm going to finish with a few questions for us. Let me start with a question for you. It's a real question to real people. What do you think of when you hear the word God? I'm asking you what you think of. Not what you think you should think of, but what you think of. That is important. I don't want a Sunday school answer. I want a real answer. What do you think of when you hear the word God? What is he like? How does he act? Thank you, Ines. How does he act? How would you describe him? Because John is writing this book to present to us Jesus Christ, that in Jesus we may see God. Okay? And so if your understanding or your thinking about what God is like has no room for Jesus acting like this, then you're not thinking about God. You're thinking about someone or something else, your own creation probably, but not God as he has chosen to show himself in Jesus Christ. John is presenting Jesus Christ so that in Jesus we may see what God is like. So the question I've just asked you, what do you think of when you hear the word God? If God in your mind or your heart is not like this, John 13 verses 1 to 17, if he's not like that, you've not got God at all. And the wonderful thing is that John had to record Jesus because he knew people would get it wrong. Jesus had to reveal God because God and Jesus knew people would get it wrong. So they reveal that Jesus reveals God that we may get it right. If the idea that you have of God doesn't allow for God to bow and wash the feet of people, then let him show you. Let him show you what he's really like. We're introduced to a very fine topic in verse 1. It's simply this, the long reach of Christ's love. You see that in verse 1? The setting is the feast of the Passover. And before they have that feast, Jesus knows certain things. He knows that his hour has come. That in John's writing means that the purpose for which he's come is now here. Okay, we're in the last 2 days of Christ living before he's crucified. Okay, he's come to die. That's what he's come for. That's his hour. Okay, to die and rise again. So he knows that his hour has come, that he should depart from this world to the Father. Okay, he's going to go back to the Father, but it's going to go through the cross and the empty tomb. He knows those things. And then John describes what's going on in Jesus. He says, having loved his own who were in the world, that's a description of John chapter 1 to 12, he loved them to the end. That's a description of all that comes in the second part of John's Gospel, 13, all the way through to the end. He loves them to the end. It would be impossible to rehearse everything that happens between now and the end of the book. But here's just some of it. In the next few chapters, he instructs those he's going to leave behind that they may know and be prepared for what lies ahead. In anticipation of what is to come, in Luke's account, he will sweat drops of blood in anguish as he looks towards the cross. Before he gets to the cross, he will sweat drops of blood in anguish. And only an angel is fit company for that moment. He will be betrayed with a sign of friendship, a kiss. He will be denied by those who have followed him for 3 years. He will be tried, falsely accused, scourged and mocked, declared innocent yet condemned. He will be crucified and confirmed dead. And John says, it's all because he loves. It's all because he loves. He's showing his love to those who are his. It's not an accident. It's not a travesty of justice. It's not a horrific scene only. It's all because he loves. He loves them to the end. Does your idea of God have space for God who is like that? Does your answer to what is God like, would you put love there? Would you put love so strong that it would die there? Because you must. That's what Jesus reveals. That's verse 1. Let's look at the middle section. Not just the long reach of Christ's love. Something that is, if I can say, unshakable when you consider all that he goes through. It's not just that. It's also the great bend of Christ's knees. Verses 2 to 11. There are times John records acts of God, acts of Jesus, okay, power demonstrated, so to show that he is God. So, and it's followed by an explanation by Jesus. So Jesus takes a boy's lunch, blesses the lunch, and feeds 5,000 people. And then after that, he says, I am the bread of life. So he's explaining this. I'll provide everything, miraculously provide everything you want. Everything you need, I will give and give. I am the bread of life. He explains the act. He gives a blind man his sight for the first time. This grown man sees. It's the only record of a man born blind being given sight. And after that, he declares himself to be, I am the light of the world. When you trust me, you'll see. So there are times when Jesus acts and then explains what he's done. There are also times when that order is reversed. He explains what he's going to do and then he acts. So he stands by the tomb of his friend Lazarus and he says, I am the resurrection and the life. And then he proves it, speaks into the grave and Lazarus comes out. He was dead 4 days, he comes out. I am the resurrection and the life. Look, I have power over death. So he explains what he's going to do, and then he does it. Well, this is one of these examples. He's explaining before he does it. Okay? That's the order here. He's explaining before he does it. And what he's explaining is his death. They're hours away from this betrayal, the denial, the crucifixion. And he's going to explain why he's going to die. We're told in verse 2 and 3 that there are certain things held in the mind of Jesus. Jesus knows that he will be betrayed. We're told that the devil has already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. Jesus knew that because in verses 10 and 11, Jesus says to the people in the room, you're clean, but not all of you. And John adds in verse 11, he knew who would betray him. He knew that that was the case. So Jesus knows that he would be betrayed by Judas, one of the 12. Jesus knows verse 3, he has authority. Let's see if it's up here. He has authority because the Father has given all things into his hands. He knows of deity, that he is God, that he had come from God. And he knows of his destiny, that he was going to God. So those four things, he's going to be betrayed, authority, deity, and destiny, are in his head at this point. And what does he do? He takes the posture of a slave. And he washes his disciples' feet. We just need to pause for a moment there. That task was reserved only for the lowliest of slaves. Only they had it on their job description. many slaves were around in the day, and they would never have to touch feet. They would never have to wash feet. Jewish slaves would never have to wash feet. Many slaves who had certain offices and roles would never have to wash feet. The lowliest of slaves, and those who were looked down upon in the day, Gentiles, oh, they could wash all the feet. That's not a problem. Women, they could wash feet. Children could wash feet. And the student of rabbis, they could wash feet. Only the lowest of slaves would wash feet. And that meant that people who were peers of each other, they wouldn't wash each other's feet. So the disciples, they sit in the room and nobody moves to wash feet because it's just, they just wouldn't do it. They wouldn't wash each other's feet because peers don't wash each other's feet. Nowhere in any Jewish writing, I'm told, nowhere in any Greek or Roman writing, is there an act recorded or remembered where someone who is senior or superior washing the feet of those who are junior or inferior. And I use the word superior and inferior lightly in that sense because Jesus acknowledges, verse 13, you do call me teacher and Lord, and so, and rightly so. I am. And you're my followers and my students. It was unthinkable that a Jew would wash anyone's feet. A Jew who was not a slave. A Jew who was called rabbi and teacher. And if we take seriously as we do what John chapter 1 to 12 reveals, the man who is God, he is the one who strips and takes the posture of a servant. It's he who equips himself to wash feet. It's him who bows and stoops and washes and dries. And then moves on to disciple number 2 and keeps going and keeps going. I suggest to you that it's one of the most stunning moments recorded in all history, let alone scripture. One man writes this verse to a song. Meekness and majesty, manhood and deity, in perfect harmony, the man who is God, Lord of eternity, dwells in humanity, kneels in humility, and washes our feet. It takes Peter to express what they're all thinking. It usually does. Peter's great. You? My feet? No. Some commentators suggest that there's just this stunned silence as Jesus moves from disciple to disciple to disciple. They haven't got a clue what to say. They've no sort of mental categories to put the actions of Jesus into. What's he doing? Washing our feet? And Peter speaks up. Verse 6, he says, you, Lord, you are washing my feet? Jesus doesn't stop because Peter needs to learn, verse 7. What I am doing, you do not understand. But you will know after this. Peter, there's a lesson you've got to learn. There's something that you don't yet know. You will know, but not yet. Peter insists even further. Never! Who's the student? Who's the teacher? Never, Jesus. You will never wash my feet. And Jesus explains, if you want to have a part with me, I have to wash your feet. That phrase, that word, you have no part with me if I do not wash your feet. It's the word that's used for inheritance. You'll have because you belong. I'll make you have because I'll make you belong by this act. And do you remember I said to you Jesus was explaining something before it happened? He's explaining his death before he dies, the hours ahead. There are 3 points of parallel, very simply, just on the screen there. both this foot washing and his dying have 3 points of parallel. Firstly, love. Firstly, love. We're told in verse 1, he loved them to the end. He loves them in this action of feet washing. And in the hours ahead, he will love them in his dying in their place. He will love them. One hymn writer simply puts it like this. See, from his head, his hands, his feet, sorrow and love flow mingled down. Did e'er such love and sorrow meet, or thorns compose so rich a crown? It was in love that Jesus died. It was in love that Jesus stoops to wash the feet. They're both the same. Out of this love comes this act. The second point of a connection or parallel. Great condescension. You would never ask the Queen to do your housework, would you? You would never ask an invited guest to do your housework, whether the royal family or not, would you? But here Jesus Christ takes the place of a criminal. At the cross, he takes the place of a criminal. And to speak of that, the eternal Son of God taking the place of a sinner, to explain that, to picture that, to communicate that, he takes the place, and the day before, he takes the place of a servant and does the one thing that is just unthinkable in their minds. Why would he do that? Wash our feet. Well, they've got the same question about why he's going to... Why would he die? They can't get that in their heads either. Exactly. Great acts of condescension. It is so incomprehensible. And yet there's a greater act to come. He will, as we read at the start of the service, he will become obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross. That's how low he will stoop to evidence his love, to rescue people like you and me and bring us to himself. It's an act of love in the foot washing and the dying. It's an act of condescension in the foot washing and the dying. And it's an act through which cleansing comes, through the foot washing and the dying. And the feet are cleansed, refreshed. And the dust is gone. The temperature is cooled. Everything is better with the feet now. And when Jesus Christ dies on the cross, God is accomplishing a cleansing for sin. It's spoken of in the Old Testament, whispered in the sacrifices, but a cleansing from sin is secured by Jesus Christ. One hymn writer puts it like this. Inscribed upon the cross we see in shining letters, God is love. He bears our sins upon the tree. He brings us mercy from above. The mercy that forgives. The mercy that cleanses. The mercy that secures a relationship with him. That's what he does. Peter has a lesson to learn. Okay, Jesus, if it's a part of you, if it's me belonging to you, so I have what you have. Do the lot. Do everything you can get your hands to. Wash my hands. Wash my head. And it's at this point, many people think that Jesus is drawing a distinction. Once I've died for you, once I've cleansed you in forgiveness, it's done. You will need to come back to me for forgiveness. Not a once for all forgiveness, but that continual repentance forgiveness. Christian, you know what it's like. You've been forgiven, and yet you need to confess. You know the sweet kiss of forgiveness on your cheek, and yet you need to come again, don't you? Even for things thought, said, and done, even this morning, we need to confess. Forgiven once and for all, bathed, bathed, forgiven again and again, our feet cleansed. And in this comment, Jesus acknowledges Judas and his betrayal. We'll look at that another day as verses 18 onwards deals with that in more detail. The great bend of Christ's knees. Folks, I suggest to you, if we get that, it would transform our view of God completely. So let me ask you the question that I asked at the start. What God? What do you think of when you hear the word God? Is God someone who would do that for someone like you? Because if he's not, if you're not thinking of a God like that, you've not got God. You need to allow this image, this picture, this revelation of God through Jesus Christ to define who God is. That's what you need to do. And if you've got false ideas about a God being distant or harsh or cruel or uncaring, that's not what we see here, is it? We see a loving, self-emptying, giving to others, even to the point of teaching them of his death, that will die in their place. There's not just the great bend of Christ's knees, there's also the clear message of Christ's voice. Jesus puts the water away, reclothes himself, verse 12, sits down. Do you know what I've done to you? Do you know what I've done? As your teacher, as your master, your Lord, I've washed your feet. I've given you an example, verse 15, that you also ought to wash one another's feet. Folks, I'm going to suggest to you that we don't really know what that means. Because if we did, the world would be a very different place. Earlier, Peter, his head was scrambling trying to understand how many times he should forgive his brothers. Okay, and he comes up with this number. In Luke's Gospel, I think it's 7 times in one day. Can you imagine forgiving one person the same thing 7 times? That's a big number, isn't it? And Jesus says, 70 times 7. Forget counting. Just forgive. Just forgive. And he tells him a story about how much we've been forgiven by God and how much we should forgive. And it all makes sense when God's in the center. It all makes sense when Christ is on his knees, washing our feet. He said, I want you to do this as well. I want this attitude, this self-emptying, this other-preferring attitude to be in you. To characterize you. Now, the message is uncompromising. He doesn't say you might or you should. This must be done. He is the master. He is the sender. He is the greater. And we are the lesser. It is uncompromising. Now, can I just say, if you're considering the Christian faith, this is really helpful. Okay, because some people will say they're Christians and not be Christians. And some people will say they're Christians and they are. How do you tell the difference? Well, do they look like this? If they don't look like a foot-washing follower of Jesus, you have the license of Jesus to take what they say with a pinch of salt. Do they look like this? If they do, if their heart is of love towards others, especially those who belong to the family of God, if their heart is like that to others, they're the real thing. Listen to them. Look to them. And if you want models or examples in life, follow people like that. It is an uncompromising, clear message from Christ. But it's also a message of unreserved blessing. Just look at the last verse. It's easy to skip. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. Does life make sense? Probably not. Without Jesus Christ, it won't. You do your best if you want. but it won't make sense. Does life make sense with Jesus Christ? Yes, but only when we completely submit ourselves to all that he says. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. He wants what is best for you. He wants what is good. And what is good for the followers of a foot washing Jesus Christ is for his followers to be loving foot washing followers. The attitude of heart. It's not about token gestures, folks. It's about an attitude of heart. I'm going to ask you some questions just as we finish together. Hopefully you'll find these helpful. Has this changed how you understand God? The question I started with is, what is the word God, what's the image you've got in your mind? What is he like? How do you describe him? Does your understanding of God, does it run along these tracks? Is God in your mind a loving, self-emptying, self-dying, that you may be saved? Has it changed how you understand God? And if it has, that's good. That is good. Because God's word reveals light. The light of truth that we may know and understand. Okay? So that's good. Do you understand how someone becomes a Christian? This is important, folks. Jesus washed the feet of the disciples to talk of cleansing. God cleanses. God forgives. He goes to the cross to purchase forgiveness so that people like you and me can be forgiven. God forgives. We don't earn our way up. God comes down and stoops as low as he can go so that he can offer to people like you and me free and full forgiveness. And becoming a Christian is the receiving of that free gift and acknowledging God to be your all in all. Do you understand how someone becomes a Christian? We're in the swimming pool in Formby yesterday, and there's some lifeguard training going on in some of the lanes. And some of the fellas had this life jacket thing attached to them, and they had to swim to the person in trouble. The person in trouble was just standing in the pool halfway down. But the person who was in trouble had to stay there, do nothing, they were told, and let this lifeguard swim to you, give you the buoy, change how it's strapped around him, and then pull you back to the end. The idea was that the lifesaver did it all. God, in saving life, has done all that is necessary. It is a free and full gift. Given to you. Do you understand how someone becomes a Christian? Is it clear what characterizes the Christian life? This foot washing following of Jesus, this loving and giving. That's where you tell the real deal from the fakes. Is that clear? Because that's an uncompromising message from Jesus Christ. Lastly, Christian, let me ask you this question. What work has Christ been doing in you as we've watched and heard from him? If you've expected me to do all the work for you, you might be surprised by that question. You're not a spectator and I'm the entertainment. God is the speaker and we are the hearers. What has God been speaking to you about as you've seen Christ stoop and cleanse and point to his death? What has God been doing in your heart and mind as he's spoken uncompromisingly about the attitude of foot washing following of him? What's he been doing? Are there shadows, sins, attitudes that stink that you become aware of? Is there a wholeheartedness that has been absent from your loving and serving of God? What is it? The point is this. Whatever it is, don't leave it here and go home for your Sunday lunch. Take it home with you and let God do business with you today, this week. Pray about it. Talk to those you can trust. Talk about it. Don't let God open up something vital and then just close it over again as if it just belongs in a Sunday. That's nonsense. Allow God to do a work in you by showing you what you are yet to grow up into. What do you think of when I say the word God? He washed his disciples' feet to show that one day he would die. And he calls those who receive his love and the effect, the cleansing effect of his death, he calls them, commands them to love like that. Is that God that you've got in your head? Because that's who God reveals himself to be. Glorious, gracious, loving God. Follow him. Trust him. Receive forgiveness from him. And you will be, verse 17, blessed.